Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today we journey to Las Cruces, New Mexico, with our guest, Dr. Michael Strasener. Michael is currently a visiting professor in social welfare policy at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces, New Mexico. He has 40 plus years experience as a clinical social worker and doctor of public health, retiring to Las Cruces in 2021 from federal service with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Dr. Strasener is married to Larry King, a clinical social worker who also retired from federal service with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Due to the increasingly conservative political policies in their home state of Arkansas and the overturning of a city ordinance in place to protect employees on the basis of gender identity and expression, the couple decided to leave Arkansas for retirement. Upon retiring from federal service, the couple researched things such as economics, political climate, cost of living, access to health care, and climate in New Mexico, Arizona, California, Colorado, and Oregon. The couple narrowed the options to California, Arizona, and New Mexico and made several trips to each to get a feel for where they wanted to live. Climate, moderate cost of living, progressive political climate, and the friendly and diverse cultural community drew them to Las Cruces, New Mexico. The presence of a university or college in their retirement community was important, and Las Cruces is the home of New Mexico State University, NMSU, a university with enrollment of around 22,000 students. Surrounded by beautiful mountains, Las Cruces looks very similar to Palm Springs, California, terrain-wise, but does not have the high Palm Springs cost of living. Las Cruces is the second largest city in New Mexico with a population of over 100,000. It's a nice size city. The couple bought their home in the Mesilla Valley area of Las Cruces in September of 2021 and were able to complete their move in November 2021. In November of 2022, Michael was contacted by a recruiter and asked to consider teaching social welfare policy at NMSU as a visiting professor. He began teaching in January of 2023 and continues to teach online courses for the School of Social Work at NMSU, focusing on social policy. Since retirement and the move to Las Cruces, Larry has been engaged with a national therapy organization to provide online mental health counseling to residents of New Mexico and Arkansas. The couple has one fur baby, Phoebe, an 11-year-old rescued St. Bernard German Shepherd mix. The couple enjoys the beautiful weather of Las Cruces by swimming, hiking, and completing landscaping projects with desert-friendly materials. Larry enjoys painting and sketching and has painted two landscape panels that are used in their landscaping. Well, Michael, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for your time. We really, really appreciate it. And I'm so excited to learn about Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. So, Michael, tell our audience, you moved from Arkansas. Give us a little background why you decided to live in Las Cruces. And you've only been there for, what, 2 years? Was it
two years? Yep, 2 years. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, sure. We were in Arkansas and we were working, you know, in federal service, and we were kind of insulated. We had the protections of federal service as an LGBTQ member. Federal employees are somewhat protected from local laws and state laws. So we had dual covered health insurance before that was generally available to LGBTQ members, dependents. But we were working for the VA and we knew we were going to retire. And we were kind of struggling with the decision of, well, do we retire and stay here and just travel a lot? Or do we need to move? So what we did was we started coming out west. We knew we wanted warm climate if we did move. We looked at California. We traveled to the states that you talked about and spent time, different times of the year there and different places, metropolitan areas, small areas, rural areas, trying to get a feel for where we wanted to be. We were wrestling with this decision when at the same time, the political climate in Arkansas was becoming increasingly more conservative. And what we felt, our feeling state, was that it was becoming more discriminatory towards LGBTQ community members. So the kind of the linchpin, the motivating factor was the city that we lived in is the most progressive city in the state of Arkansas. Now, you know, everything is a ratio. So in Arkansas, that's not saying a great deal, but it was the most progressive city in Arkansas. And it passed the city council passed an ordinance to protect city employees on the basis of gender identity and gender identification and sexual identification. And that riled up the Arkansas State Legislature. They then passed a law saying no city shall pass an ordinance allowing blah, blah, blah. So de facto, the city ordinance that was strictly intended to protect city employees on the basis of identity was overturned. And that's when we said, we think we need to take our resources, we need to take ourselves, we need to take our fur baby, find a place that one, wants us, two, respects us, and three, that we can feel a part of the community and contribute to. So we decided to, one, leave Arkansas, two, locate to a place that met a criterion. And that's what we did. We looked at Palm Springs. We looked at several places in California, Arizona. But what happened was we kept coming back to New Mexico. We would take a trip to New Mexico, then we'd go back to Arkansas, and then our next trip would be to California. And then we would say, well, let's go back to New Mexico. Let's go back to Santa Fe. Let's go back to Taos. Let's go back to Las Cruces. So we learned, we're both pretty smart fellows, but it took us a while to figure out what was happening. We were being drawn to New Mexico. So then we ruled in New Mexico. We knew we were coming to New Mexico at that point. So then we started looking at inside New Mexico, where is the vibe that fits for us? New Mexico is a wonderful place. You know, it's called the Land of Enchantment, and it's called that for a reason. It has Santa Fe, which has one kind of feel. It has Albuquerque, which has a totally different feel. It has Las Cruces, Deming, where it has, you know, borders with El Paso. So you have so many different feels inside one state. So then what we did was we started going to the different locations in New Mexico. And the same process happened. We kept coming back to Las Cruces. We would go to Las Cruces, next trip Santa Fe. Well, let's go back to Las Cruces. So a light bulb sort of went off in both of our heads simultaneously. We said, yeah, Las Cruces, that's the place for us. It was a learning process that took place over. We started probably 3 years before we retired, thinking and looking and considering and doing the things that you do. And so then we knew that Las Cruces was probably for us. We then started making extended trips. We had both retired at that time. When the process started, my husband had retired, but I had not. So we weren't as free to travel. When I retired, we were more free to travel and explore. So we would come to Las Cruces for a couple of weeks at a time and look around, you know, as you look down the 20,000 foot level, then the 10,000 foot level, then the 5,000 foot level, you know, you start narrowing down. Now, where in Las Cruces do we want to live? there are several, as in every city, there are several distinct areas that have a distinct flavor. There in Las Cruces, there's the older area called Mesilla. That was the original town that was a part of Mexico before Las Cruces ever existed, was Mesilla. Then there is the out west, there's the newer development called Sonoma Ranch, and that's where most of the snowbirds that are coming into Las Cruces, they retire there because it looks and feels a lot like retirement areas in, let's say, Phoenix or other kind of snowbird-friendly retirement areas. So that's the newer development. And then the third area, which is where we ended up, is called the Valley. And that is the old agricultural valley that's not very far from the Rio Grande. So that's where all the pecan trees are. That's where there's cotton grown. It's an agricultural area. We are just outside the city limits. There are a lot of tractors going up and down our road. We live on a state highway, but we live in the agricultural area. So it has that feel, farming. There's a lot of farming around us. So it felt like a good fit. So that's kind of the process we use to end up where we are.
So there's something that drew you to New Mexico. And I hear that quite often with some people. It's just, I guess it's that land of enchantment thing that is just, it's beauty too.
Right.
You know, you just see everything, the mountains, and it's just, even seems like a mystical thing.
It is. You know, that's exactly right. There's a feel, and I know that sounds kind of silly to say that. And we're not big feelers. Like, we're not mystical people, and we don't get into that. But there is something about being here that feels good to us, and we love traveling. Like, the good thing about New Mexico is it's a rectangle from north to south, so you can get anywhere, and we're in the southernmost tip, so you can get anywhere you need to be in New Mexico in 2.5 hours. So we'll go up an hour north, and we're in the most beautiful, beautiful mountain ranges, kind of like Bear Lake, California. We'll go 30 minutes to the west, and we're in just flat, scrub, desert. And that has its own beauty, and we find that very beautiful.
Yes.
And then we go north. And so anywhere you are in New Mexico, you can kind of depending upon what you want to do at that point in time, you can seek out the terrain that fits your mood. And it does have a different feel. I think part of it is that New Mexico is so culturally diverse. You know, we live in an area that is predominantly the residents here are Mexican. They're Americans, but they'll tell you my heritage is Mexican. It's not Spanish. It's Mexican. Mm-hmm. And so it is, for example, the university is 73 Mexican and persons of color, our student ratio. The community is about 52% Mexican. And that just is a wonderful environment. When you come from predominantly
white male,
Anglo-Saxon male, straight, yeah. Arkansas, and you move to non-white. And you know, the Mexican culture is a matriarchal culture, and that's a totally different feel than a patriarchal culture. Mm-hmm. The families are organized, governed, and Native American by the matriarchs. So New Mexico has a strong Native American component. It has an extremely strong Mexican component. And then it has some white folk and then a lot of retirees. So that's part of when we talk about the feel, what feels good is that diversity. Now, if someone doesn't like that, they're not going to like it here. Mm-hmm. If somebody wants homogeneous, white, normal, standard, routine, they're going to feel uneasy here because it's going to not feel the same way. But if you enjoy diversity, if you enjoy things, learning new things about cultures that you haven't been around, then you'll enjoy New Mexico. And southern New Mexico is, like I said earlier, you know, it's extremely diverse. Native American, Mexican, and then snowbirds, and then people like us that have retired here. The New Mexico, an interesting statistic, and then I'll stop rambling. An interesting statistic is Mexico has the highest ratio of PhDs in the nation.
Hmm.
And that's because of all the research that's done here. Los Alamos, you know, where the atomic bomb was devised. White Sands, missile base.
Yes.
There are a lot of disproportionate number of universities in New Mexico compared to the population, because New Mexico was a site of research for the federal government for 50 years. So there, it's a very interesting mix. It's very, and we enjoy it. We enjoy it so far.
What was your specific criteria that, okay, so you wanted to, you were thinking about leaving Arkansas. What were you actually looking for? I know you were looking for diversity and LGBTQ rights. What else were you looking for that made you point towards New Mexico?
Sure. Well, because we're both analytical people, you know, we had the poster board up on the dining room wall, and we had on the left side, we had the different states, and on the top axis, we had these variables that we were interested in. One was diversity, one was LGBTQ rights, one was economics, one was climate, one was taxation and how they handle Social Security, because every state has a different way of, in some states it's taxable. In New Mexico, it is not taxable income.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of the functional logistics of living, you know, it's okay to say New Mexico has a really neat vibe for it, but if you can't afford to live here, then it's not going to be good. So those were the factors that we looked at. We looked at economics, climate, diversity, and specific LGBT taxation. And related to economics, we looked at property cost, because that's, you can have a fairly decent economic base, but if you know, the cost of buying property is not, if it's not attainable, then everything else really doesn't matter.
Right, it goes in the toilet, so to speak.
Yeah.
And how about healthcare?
Healthcare was up there. Yes, you're right. Healthcare, access to routine and then specialty healthcare. How many, a kind of a driver of how healthcare is going to go in a state is how many medical schools are in the state. Because medical schools produce the doctors, and then related to the medical schools are going to be all the allied health. Physical therapist, speech therapist, occupational, you know, those are all kind of clustered together around a medical school. So we looked at that. New Mexico was in the middle on that. It wasn't the highest and it wasn't the lowest. Their general practitioner to population ratio is lower than Arkansas. And I think that I haven't really put my finger on why that is. When you look at the other states that we had, California was the highest, of course, but you know, then the economic issues crossed that off. We looked at, when we were looking at New Mexico, and we were looking at northern New Mexico, central or southern, were the three kind of decisions to be made. Santa Fe area, Albuquerque area, or Las Cruces area were the three kind of tertiary levels. And we decided and we researched the healthcare in El Paso. El Paso is a major metropolitan area for the United States, and it has major healthcare access. So we're 42 miles from El Paso. So living in Las Cruces, we have really good general practitioner access. We have what I would call moderate specialty access in the Las Cruces area. Mm-hmm. We've been here 2 years, and I have asthma, so I have specialty pulmonary care, and I haven't had any problem accessing multiple specialties for different things that happen. But that was on the list. Healthcare was on the list. But being so close to El Paso, even if you have really unique specialty healthcare needs, you're only 42 miles from that. And right. I know, say only 42 miles is a long way for some people, but you know, in some of the metropolitan areas, like in Albuquerque, from one point of Albuquerque to the other, you're going to drive 28 miles. So 42 miles, we don't, if we need it, we don't consider 42 miles a long trip.
Okay. So geographically speaking, Michael, where is Las Cruces located within New Mexico?
It is. It's 42 miles from Mexico, El Paso. It is the southernmost tip, if you would. New Mexico is like a rectangle, north to south. And in the sort of north central, you have Albuquerque. In the north, you have Santa Fe. And then down in the south, you have Las Cruces. Las Cruces is, like I said, 40-ish miles from Mexico. It is 3 hours, 3.5 hours from Albuquerque. So if you looked at, if you took a cereal box, you know, Santa Fe would be in the top, Albuquerque would be in the middle, and Las Cruces would be at the bottom of the box.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Tell us a little bit about the climate. Are the summers hot and dry? Are the winters cold? Do you get monsoons like we do in Phoenix? Or
oh, yeah.
Is it just beautiful?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, coming from Arkansas, we think it's all beautiful because, you know, Arkansas is like a, it's like Southern Louisiana without the charm. It is, Arkansas is muggy, humid, hot, wet, cold. Climate in Arkansas is very, we didn't care for it. So coming to Mexico, we came with kind of a biased attitude about the climate because it all felt better to us.
Mm-hmm.
It is, the average rainfall is about 9 inches a year. In Arkansas, we get 9 inches in a month. So the days are beautiful. The sky is 10 blue. Months out of the year. It is blue, 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 cloudless.
I've never seen a place, when I was in New Mexico, I would just like stare at the sky.
It's amazing.
And I was like, my God, it's so blue.
It looks like a, you know, in the movies when they retouch the sky to make it bluer, that's what it looks like to me is like, oh, they've retouched the sky.
Yeah.
It's beautiful blue. The let's see, when does it start getting hot here? Starts getting hot in late July, hot, hot. And then that continues for about 6 to 8 weeks, I would say. It's a very dry heat.
When you say hot, how hot?
Our hottest day this summer was 110. That was our hottest day.
That's hot.
It averaged, you know, in the 100, 98, 99, 100. Now, having said that, we have these things, and I think you know about them. They're called evaporative coolers. They call them swamp coolers.
Yes.
And what they do is they basically put water in the air, and the water is cooler coming out of the ground than the air temperature. So it puts moist, cool air in your house and then pulls it back out through the windows, through a vacuum system. And we thought, oh gosh, how's that going to work? But we've been okay. We have a couple of backup air conditioners that we use a couple of weeks out of the year. But for the most part, we don't need them. The temperature in the house, of course, the house is built, most of the houses are built, you know, to accommodate swamp coolers. Ceilings are higher. The floors are all tile. They're built with the temperature and the climate in mind. Windows are tall. So we haven't had any problem with it. I would say that if you come to southern New Mexico, if you like warm temperature that has very little water in the air. As an asthmatic, like for me, it's been phenomenal because in Arkansas, or really any climate where there's a lot of moisture in the air, I have trouble breathing. But down here, my physical activity level outside, like we do a lot of landscaping projects because we bought a house with a lot of unimproved yard. And so we're doing all sorts of tree planting and terracing and all sorts of cool stuff. And I was able to do that where I could not have done that in a wet climate. I couldn't have been able to breathe properly. But down here, I was able to be a lot more physical. So the climate is, it was a plus for us. It wouldn't be a plus for everyone. In those weeks where it's really, really hot, you do what everybody does. I'm sure it's what you do too. You do your running around first thing in the morning. You stay in your house until late in the afternoon. And then you do whatever running around or outside activities you need to do. Because as soon as the sun starts going down, the temperature drops and it's wonderful. Like we would use our fire pit in July at night.
Wow.
Because the temperature would drop. Part of that's because we're in the vicinity of the Rio Grande, the river. But it's kind of a contrast. Even in the summer, the temperature drops at night because you're basically still in the desert. Even though people have turned this into an agricultural valley, it's still the desert.
Does Las Cruces sit high? What's the...
I want to say 3,900.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, no. It's not bad at all.
I know Santa Fe is like 7,000 or 7,500. Mm-hmm. So
yep.
Considering yep. that's kind of low. And the amazing part that you said is it could be 110 and then it dips down at night. Could it dip down to like 80 or?
Oh yeah. Oh, easily. Yeah. And below that we have a thermometer thing, temperature gauge on our back patio and we check it. And it can be easily 100, which is 100 sounds hot. If you're in Arkansas, which is my frame of reference, and it's 100, you're miserable. You're absolutely miserable. Here, when it's our experience has been, it's 100, and you're not miserable. You just notice that the air's a little warm. That's it.
Here too.
And then at night, when it drops down to say 80 or 75-ish, you start to feel like, oh, that's cool. This is kind of nice. I can jive around. I can do stuff. I can have fun. So it's very enjoyable. And there are a lot of, that's the cool thing also, is that to accommodate the climate, there are a whole lot of festivals, events, outdoor events that take place in New Mexico in general after dark, because they take into account the climate. So they know, oh, it's going to be cool. As soon as the sun drops, we're going to have a festival at Mesilla. Mesilla is the old town center, like I said, that was here before Las Cruces. And so it is very ingrained in the cultural of the area. I teach at New Mexico University. In every class, I do what's called a land acknowledgement. And that's where I acknowledge that the original indigenous peoples of New Mexico are Mexicans, and their families are still here. They own this land, and so I acknowledge that we're all visitors on the land that indigenous persons settled for us. We came later. The reason I bring that up is because those folks hold all sorts of festivals, community events, acknowledgments. There's something going on all the time after dark, if you want to avail yourself of it.
Right. Nice. Nice. So how about in the winter months? How low does the temperature go down in the winter?
I think we had, I'm trying to remember, it's so minimal. We had two dustings of snow, just a dusting. And I want to say upper 20s was the coldest it ever got, 28, 27. That's the coldest it got.
That's cold.
And yeah, we were here. It was kind of funny. We were here and we still have friends in Arkansas. It's not like everybody just to be evaporated. So we stay in touch with those folks and they had -4. Yeah.
I'll take 20.
I'll take any day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a very, I think the word is temperate is the word that they use to describe it is. Yeah. The numbers look scary on paper. You know, when you read, like if you just Google and say, what are the temperatures like in Las Cruces? And you go, oh my God, 110. It's very brief and it still cools up as soon as the night drops, as soon as the sun goes down. It's very manageable. It's very manageable.
I mean, it sounds delightful to me. So living here in Phoenix, we get 110, but we get 50, 60 days of over 110. in a row with no break. So it could be anywhere between 110, 120 during that period of time for months. And this summer especially was really, really intense hot heat. Wow. In fact, at night, if usually it would break 100, but there were many, many nights where it didn't even break 100. And I would be out walking the dogs at a quarter to nine in the evening, and it would still be 105, 107. And so you really, you didn't get that relief.
But
like today, I go out to take the dogs out really early in the morning at like 5 a.m. And I was chilly at 61 degrees. So after, like when September came around, it started, you know, moderating in temperature. Yeah. So my point is Las Cruces sounds really beautiful as far
as... far enough east to not get what you get as far as the long-term heat. It's just far enough east to not get that. And it's far enough west to get the good part. And so it's kind of like in this little channel, north to south, weather-wise. Yeah. The monsoons, I wanted to talk about the monsoon season, because when we were researching this, and you know, you read about the monsoon and then you look at videos and you think, the thing is, the monsoon term actually addresses the wind, not the rain. The monsoon is about
the
wind and the dust, and not the particulate, and not the rain. It you'll get heavy rains during the monsoon, but it's when you compare it to other parts of the country, it's not really heavy rain.
Right.
It feels like heavy rain because you don't get that much rain here.
But
it's the winds. And you do have to be aware. I mean, there are occasionally wind warnings, and you want to do things like, you know, maybe don't put all of your outdoor furniture out in an open area because it's going to get blown away.
Right. And you don't want to be out.
And you don't want to be out. And particularly if you have any kind of breathing problems like I do, because it does, we're a desert. So where it blows in desert wind and you've got particulate. And so the interesting thing is that when we traveled to New Mexico, again, on the several trips that we came, we were here during several of the monsoon seasons. And we started our planning pre-COVID, and we would see people out wearing masks before COVID was a thing. And like, oh, I wonder what that's all about. It was the dust.
Yeah.
They were wearing masks to not experience the dust. So
do you get valley fever out there? Like we do?
Yeah, no. My husband researched that because that's what he did before he went to social work school. And so we also, an interesting thing, when you bring up healthcare, it's an interesting thing. You know, part of my training, having a PhD in public health, part of my training was, and being a COVID survivor, part of my issue was I really watched COVID carefully. And I watched all the different trends and which states appeared to be taking it seriously early and what was going on. And I know there were a lot of progressive versus conservative ideologies related to should they shut down or not, should they close the schools or not, and all that. I come from a public health perspective, not a political perspective, and I wanted to see what people were doing that was saving people's lives. And so when we looked at New Mexico, New Mexico was one of the first states to impose a travel ban. There were times when we could not come to New Mexico because their COVID rates had gotten to a point low enough that they did not want people bringing in this virus. They were the first state to implement statewide free vaccinations. They were one of the first states to get their COVID ratio down below the national average. And when the first time the state opened up right after COVID was still going on, but the state got to where they would allow people to come in from other states. We came from Arkansas, and I know it sounds like I'm bashing Arkansas, but I'm kind of stating facts. In Arkansas, they had a 26% usage of masks. They had a 20% vaccination ratio. And in New Mexico, they had an 89% compliance rate with vaccinations. Voluntary vaccinations. So there was something here that the government was able to communicate in a way that was meaningful to the people and not, you know, telling them what they had to do, not right. in a strong arm approach,
right.
but in a way that resonated with the people that lived here, and they got vaccinated. And their illness rates were lower, and their hospitalization rates were lower, and their death rates were lower. The population of New Mexico and Arkansas are only about 300,000 people apart. Arkansas has about 300,000 more people. So you can compare the statistics. It's a fair comparison. And when you look at how low the vaccination rate was in Arkansas and how high it was in New Mexico, it told us a couple of things. One, the public health people and the government were communicating fairly and openly in a transparent manner and respectfully. And that the citizens who lived here trusted what they were hearing and chose to get vaccinated.
It says something about the intelligence rate.
It does say something that people were able to get the information.
Education.
And make a decision. Yeah, based upon what they felt was in their best interest. And that has to do a lot with the live and let live. There's a really live and let live atmosphere here where I'm not going to – the vibe that we get is one of I'm going to take care of me and mine and ours, and you take care of you and yours. I'll help you anytime you need my help, but I'm not going to force it on you. And I'm not going to force my opinions, ideas, and attitudes on you. And I'm going to respect yours, and I want you to respect mine, but we're going to have this live and let live agreement. And we've seen that operationalized in New Mexico, where people do have that live and let live vibe.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So tell the audience, Michael, does Las Cruces have a larger retirement community? There are a lot of retirees there.
It's growing. It's not large. It is predominantly a community of people that has been here is multi-generational families. Las Cruces is the second largest, fastest growing community for retirees in New Mexico. So it is increasing. It's growing. It is, I wish I could remember the age statistics, but it is a very 40 plus community. Mm-hmm. You know, most people are 40 and up who live here, mm-hmm. you know, the younger population. And so you do have but the good news is there are enough retirees that you do have retiree-centric activities. You do have retiree-centric opportunities. And so that's really good. You know, they do have multiple exercise programs. They do have multiple hobby programs. They do have very diverse. If you're into golf, you can golf. If you're into tennis, you can tennis. If you're into quilting, you can quilt. There are enough retirees that have come in that now the community is saying, let's have opportunities for retirees because we want them here. We like them here. Still, age-wise, it's still pretty diverse.
And that's what I hear about New Mexico, even in other cities. I always heard that they take care of the retirees, mm-hmm. you know, as far as activities are concerned.
Yeah. And there's like also that. A mindset. Services. I think it relates also to, I've noticed, and I don't think it's anecdotal, because my husband has commented on this also, is that there is a strong cultural component of respecting those who are, I'll put this quote in term, elderly. You know, there is a cultural aspect to respecting the wisdom that an older person brings to a situation. And that is, and that's cultural. Mm-hmm. That's built into the culture of the fabric of New Mexico and probably other states. mainly because of Native American and the Mexican communities.
Right.
Because that's important to them. Therefore, it feeds the businesses you go into, you feel it. The restaurants you go into, you feel it. There's a respect that you didn't feel in Arkansas. And in some of the other states that we traveled to when we were visiting, Oregon, for example, you didn't feel it. It could be a whole bunch of other reasons for that, but I don't think it's anecdotal. I think that there is a mindset among folks that if an older person, you know, if they see an older person, that older person brings something valuable to the situation and respect that. I know as a teacher, I'm probably a little older than most of my colleagues. I was recruited based upon my training. The university had a very specific area that they needed training, and that was my area. But I'm a little older than most of my colleagues. But all of my students treat me with, I think, probably the utmost respect. I sense it, and I don't think it's just because I'm a professor, because that doesn't get you anything anymore. I think it's because they've learned that, hey, older people bring something to the table that's important.
That's really nice and refreshing. So is living in an LGBTQ community important to you? If so, is there one? Or again, you said it's live and let live, so it's pretty integrated. Is that the case?
It's pretty integrated. There are LGBTQ groups. There are social groups. There are LGBTQ organizations. There are active PFLAG. There's active different organizations that are there. It is, I think my lived experience has been that the LGBTQ community is integrated into the global fabric of the community. And so the need to build safe places and safe spaces is not as strident here as, say, it was in Arkansas, because it was extremely important in Arkansas.
Right.
It was a protective resiliency issue in Arkansas to build and have those spaces.
Yeah.
Here in southern New Mexico, and I can only speak for southern New Mexico, there are safe spaces that are integrated LGBTQ and straight. And so for example, at the farmer's market, every Saturday, because of the climate, there's a farmer's market 10 months out of the year. Farmers Arts and Crafts Market is what it's called. It's one of the largest in the nation, and it's phenomenal. But there are several LGBTQ businesses that are there. There are several LGBTQ groups that are performing there every Saturday. And they are integrated into the overall community that there. So when people who are not members of the LGBTQ community go to the farmers market, they're exposed to these businesses and these groups. And it's just, okay, this is another part of our community.
Right. So that's really cool, because, and I totally understand what you're saying. In Arkansas, it was needed, a safe space, because yes, and I come from, you know, another place. I had moved to Florida. To me, in Florida, you needed a gay bar. So I felt safe going to a gay bar then, and my preference would be going to a gay bar rather than a straight bar there. Mm-hmm. But in a place like Las Cruces, where it's all integrated, I think that's totally fine as well. It's the same, I think, all over New Mexico. I was in Santa Fe. Santa Fe is the same way. I said, oh, so where's the gay bar? And they said, what gay bar? There is no gay bar. And I said, why not? Because at the time, where was I living? Was I in Florida or New York? I was like, why not? Why don't you have a gay bar? I don't understand. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, because we don't really need one. Mm-hmm. And I kind of thought about it, and I was like, oh, that's kind of strange. That's different.
Yep.
But it's refreshing.
Yep. I'm on a Facebook page for Gay Las Cruces, I think is the name of it. And folks will – it's wonderful, because folks who are considering moving to Las Cruces will post on there. Mm-hmm. And they'll start asking questions, which is very smart. And they'll say, well, how many gay bars are there? And members of our group will say, well, there really aren't any quote unquote gay bars. There are bars that they have, you know, gay nights, or they'll
gay
have
people go there.
Gay people go to, or they'll have, you know, the owners. Well, one of the owners of one of the largest restaurants in Las Cruces is a member of the LGBTQ community. So, and sometimes the response is like you said, they'll say, what? There's no gay bars? What's going on? What's wrong with Las Cruces? It must be conservative. And,
right.
And you know, we do the best we can to describe what we're living here, which is that integrated, there's really not a need for it. Now, I will say that if you are used to the entertainment that goes on in a traditional gay bar, which is drag shows. And strippers, mm-hmm. then you'll probably need to go to El Paso. Now, I want to take a step backwards. There are a couple of bars that do have drag shows every week here in Las Cruces, but they are probably a little more, oh, this is going to sound so judgy, and I don't mean it. They're a little more refined than probably what typically happens in a gay bar that I'm used to. Maybe I've just been going to really trashy gay bars my whole life. But they are fun. They are interesting. They're enjoyable. But I do think that you see a mixed crowd also. I think that it's not just members of our community going to see the drag shows.
As long as everybody gets along,
yeah,
with one another, and yeah. there's no like you know,
yeah, no friction,
animosity or any no yeah. friction. Yeah. That's pretty refreshing. So, does Las Cruces have a pride festival or a parade?
We just completed Las Cruces and several towns in New Mexico, and I think in California they're starting to do this. They're moving their pride from the summer to the fall mm-hmm. because thank goodness.
Yeah.
And we just finished our Pride Festival with the parade, and they opened the downtown square. It's blocked off, and it's really large. I mean, my only frame of reference is Arkansas, so it may not be large, but to me it is. It's very enjoyable to go to. I can't remember this crowd size. It was very crowded. And it's represented by not just solely members of the LGBTQ community, but members of the Las Cruces community want to be there. The mayor opens the Pride Festival every year. The governor opened it year before last, I believe. Now he's a congressman, opened it. It is part of something that just happens, I believe, in Las Cruces. It is important that it is an LGBTQ event, because there are folks that are in their 20s that are coming to grips with who they are, and they need to be in that type of setting mm-hmm. to see the acceptance, to see the diversity, even the diversity within our community, mm-hmm. and to start self-identifying. So I think it's important to identify it as an LGBTQ event, that it serves a specific purpose for members of our community, but also that it is not exclusionary to people who are not members of our community, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yes, it definitely does. So is it easy or difficult to make friends in Las Cruces? So do you have a bunch of straight friends, gay friends, every, you know, mixed?
Yeah.
And how easy or difficult was it to reach out to make friends?
It is. If you're an extrovert, it's probably very easy. Again, going back to the live and let live, you know, people are going to kind of let you be until you reach out to them. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of people. When you first move in, I'll give you an example. We moved into the Mesilla Valley. Both of the neighbors to my right and my left are retired. They're both straight. And they both came over and said, hey, we're glad you're here. My name is Bill. This other guy, my name is Dan. Welcome to our community. You know, if you need anything, like if you need to know a name of a good plumber or if you need, you know, as you get settled here, just let us know. And we've done that. And we consider them to be our friends because we've also, you know, socialized. And that's, you know, partly because we live side by side and we got to get along. But I think the live and let live means also that you will have to maybe take one more step to reach out to people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a, there's that little bit of space. It's protective in one sense, but it also means you're going to have to take an extra step to reach out. Now, as far as gay friends, there's an every Wednesday group that gets together. There's an every Saturday group that gets together. And that's the best way to meet LGBT friends within the community. And that's fairly easy. I mean, that's pretty standard no matter where you live, is that you'll be drawn to people of similar interests, similar backgrounds, and you'll make friends that way if you go to those events. Now, my husband and I are both introverts. We are both very introverts. So we go to things like the Pride Festival because it's a big, large crowd, and we feel safe in a big, large crowd. And then we keep in touch with certain folks in our lives in the community that may or may not live here. And we've met a few, I would say, a spattering of people. But that fits us because we're introvert.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an extrovert, the opportunities are there. Like I said, there's a social group, two different social groups twice a week. There's the business owner who owns the largest restaurant in a nice part of town. It's a member of our community. It's here if you want it, but you will have to seek it out.
Right. Be realistic. Nobody's going to be knocking on your door saying, hi,
yeah,
I want to make friends. You have to go out and approach that as well. So, Michael, tell us, what is the local economy like? Can you provide examples to the audience of housing costs, renting versus owning, electric bills, water bills, gases,
sure.
and taxes?
Sure. The economy in New Mexico as a whole is pretty good because it's got a lot of income based upon the oil and refinery industry. It's got a big agricultural economy. Again, there are a lot of universities. There's a lot of healthcare. The economy is pretty good. In Las Cruces, I think there's a pretty good, for example, we retired. Employment was not on our radar. We just were like, we're retired. And then within 5 months, we were both working again just because there were so many opportunities. And we thought, well, why not? You know, we started out doing part-time stuff. And I've heard that from other people who have retired to Las Cruces, like that have retired. And then 5 months later, they've taken a part-time gig doing such and such just because it's here. We find it comparable to Arkansas. The price per square footage for a house is very comparable. The utility bills are a little less than what we paid in Arkansas. Taxes are about the same. We didn't notice any big difference. The big deal here is, I'm sure it is in Phoenix too, is water. Mm-hmm. You know, what everybody talks about is, you know, what's going to happen to water costs and where are we going to get our water? And oh my gosh, we're fortunate living in the valley. We have a well and we also are on city water. So we're pretty insulated from that. But still, that's just something to be thinking about is if you move to the desert, water is a commodity that probably will go up in cost over time.
Right.
There's a whole lot of solar here. We don't have solar, but western-facing homes, there's a lot of solar panels on the houses here. You know, people, our friends from Tucson that just came over, they have total solar, and so they run their entire house off their solar panels. They even have a plug-in hybrid that if they plug it in at certain non-peak times, they're not only are they getting paid by the electric company to put back on the grid, they're charging their car for free. So, you have the sunlight here if you want to do solar. We've not, just because we haven't had the time. We've been doing other things. The average, I'd say, to rent, I see them for a two-bedroom, two average bedrooms in an apartment, probably $700 to $900. a house, 1100 to 1500, probably in that range.
Do you own?
We do own. We bought and we paid, I want to say $85 a square foot for our house. A new construction is about 100 to 110, I think, down here. Maybe 120. So we bought, you know, something that was already built, been here for quite a while. And so we could get a price break on the cost per square foot. There is, it's a very, and it will be for quite some time. It's an interesting thing. Las Cruces was protected from the real estate market in Las Cruces is extremely active. Because of several things. One is you've got university pulling people in. You've got several things that pull people in. And then, you know, there's new construction. So people sell their house and buy a new house. And then there's that house for people to buy who come in. So there's always a constant moving. It's not unusual. It happens probably in every community. But when we were watching real estate prices and evaluations before we moved, the Las Cruces area was extremely stable compared to parts of California that seemed to vary up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Never got low, but, you know, went from high to extremely high, then back down to high. Las Cruces, around that line. You know, a 2,000 square foot house would be, I don't know, 200,000, if I did my math right.
That's cheap.
It's really, it's, we found it to be very, very beneficial to be a buyer.
Or affordable, I should say.
Yeah. We found it to be very beneficial to be a buyer in this area. Mm-hmm. And if you're downsizing, like we downsized, we moved from one size house to a smaller house. And if you're, because retirees, you're thinking, why do I need all this crap that I've had for 20 years?
Get rid of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And so we sold a larger home. Downsized to a little smaller home, and because of the it just difference in evaluation, we got, you know, more quality in our house and more features in our home and save some money at the same time.
Wow.
Now you can't do that everywhere in New Mexico. If you want to go to Santa Fe,
yeah, it's
be crazy
more expensive.
Crazy. Albuquerque is a little, it's more expensive, but yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay. So tell us a little bit about the arts and culture scene in Las Cruces. Is there one?
There is one. As you would expect, it is very driven by the Native American and the Mexican cultures.
Mm-hmm.
It's real active. There's the Downtown Revitalization Project, which has several galleries for artists to participate in. There are a couple of museums that are... And they are focused on the culture of the Native American communities or the Mexican American communities. There are pottery centers. There's a pottery center for folks. My husband is a painter, so he paints and he communicates with folks about that. So it's vibrant. It's certainly not Palm Springs vibrant, and it's not, you know, Albuquerque. It's definitely not Santa Fe vibrant.
Santa Fe, yeah.
But it is. It's there. It's a, like I said, the Downtown Revitalization Project has helped a lot with that.
Do they have any theater?
They do. They have a community theater. They have, and they do like four shows a year, maybe three. They have open, you know, open casting, so you can go down, sign up, try out. They have regional traveling theater comes through. So there are folks that come, you know, from
like off Broadway,
both coasts.
Type.
Yeah, both coasts. And they come here, and I think they're probably on their way to California. But they stop here in Las Cruces. And there have been a couple of traveling touring groups that came through and did productions.
So if you wanted to see like that kind of Broadway kind of theater, you can go to El Paso?
Yes, El Paso. Yeah, because El Paso's got, well, you know, there's just so much money in El Paso. There's so many wealthy benefactors, and there's so much going on in El Paso that, you know, the theater arts people, There's also a lot of, I want to get into maybe the movie community in Las Cruces. Las Cruces is being used, the New Mexico actively sought out, a lot of states did, but New Mexico was one of the areas that people were coming to film TV shows and movies because of the scenery. Mm-hmm. So the state of New Mexico established their film and TV board, and they offer incentives. So Breaking Bad, you know, yep. Better Call Saul, a lot of TV shows and movies mm-hmm. have been filmed in New Mexico. And recently there have been three films that were filmed in Las Cruces. And I was the funny thing is I was an extra in one of those movies.
Oh, wow.
And that was fun. It was fun for a, you know, not a performing person to be on a movie set.
Were you on it? You were actually on it?
I was on film. I was a policeman.
What's the name of the movie?
Yeah, it's called The Locksmith with Ryan Phillippe.
Okay.
And you'll see me standing, two scenes, I'm standing behind Kate Bosworth, so you can't miss me. You can miss me because I'm an extra. But, yeah, but it's a fun thing to do. And, yeah. And, you know, it was just an open call to the community saying, hey, we need people. If you're interested, give us a call. And so I called them and they said, yeah, you know, we need someone to be a policeman. I said, I can fake that. Give me a badge. Give me a badge. So that was fun.
I love it.
But what they're doing is they've established an incentive, and there's this huge warehouse on Amador Avenue here in Las Cruces. It looks like an old grain silo. I don't know what it is because there's no grain down here. But you drive that. But what they've done is they are renovating the interior of that to be a film production center. And so the movies that come will now have their own, I guess they'll lease it. I don't know what the deal is, but they're renovating this, I don't know, 500,000 square foot warehouse. It's massive and it's huge. It's really tall. And so that's going to draw more film and TV. And that's a kind of a neat thing. I had no experience.
Yeah.
I had no opportunity in Northwest Arkansas to play like that.
Right.
So it was fun.
That's fun. Yeah. So tell us about the foodie scene. Is there restaurants besides chain restaurants that you can mm-hmm. go to that are decent?
They're mostly in Mesilla, down in Old Town. There are a lot of mom and pops that you don't find out about until you've been here a while. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't advertise. They don't. It's not their scene. Mm-hmm. You find out about them. There's a Greek restaurant that we found out through a friend of a friend, and it's amazing. There's, of course, all sorts of Mexican and Hispanic-based restaurants, and it's amazing. You go in. We're only 28 miles from Hatch, which Hatch is the National Chili Festival.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I wasn't a big chili person before we moved here, but now I eat Hatch chilies and almost everything because it tastes good to me
so
now.
So good.
Yeah. So, yeah, it is. Upper cuisine, 5-star, there's probably one, maybe 2 5-stars, maybe. Again, if you're into that, if you're a super foodie,
right.
you'll probably be a little disappointed.
Right. If you come from places like New York or
– yeah, you're going to be a little disappointed in the level of – but if you like good food and if you're – more so if you're interested in the environment of the restaurant and the history of the restaurant, there are a lot of historic restaurants. There's one called La Posada in Mesilla that's been around since Billy the Kid was traveling in Mesilla. It's wow. really, really old. It was an old stagecoach hotel, and now it's a restaurant. The hotel is gone. But there's a lot of historic, there's a lot of mom and pops that are so cool when you find them. So it's pretty good. But again, 5-star, you're probably not going to be satisfied.
Okay. That's fair enough. Is there any kind of public transportation? Do they have a tram or kind of anything like that? Or just buses, maybe?
Buses. What we have is a pretty...
But you need a car.
Yeah, you do need a car. You can get – now, we have a friend who's a member of the community who doesn't drive, and she gets everywhere she needs to go. She had to figure it out, but she can get where she needs to go. She have to plan extra time. I don't think it's that different than if you were, say, living in Chicago.
Right.
And you had to figure out the bus route and figure out how to get from here to there. But she gets where she needs to go, and she's not had any problem. We've said, well, you know, we're going over here if you need a ride. So, no, you know, I've got it figured out. I've got it handled. The bus system. But if you're used to a car, then you're going to need a car.
Then you need one. How close are you to the airport?
It's a very small airport. It's not an international airport. You're 42 miles from El Paso, which is an international airport. So if you're going to go, say, to overseas or anywhere, you're going to go to El Paso.
Okay.
The airport here does fly to Santa Fe and Albuquerque every day for commuters. So you can catch a commuter flight, and in 45 minutes, you can be in Albuquerque, and in an hour, you can be in Santa Fe. So we've talked about doing that, just doing a trip where you hop on the plane first thing in the morning, go to Santa Fe, spend the day in Santa Fe, catch a plane at 6 p.m. and come back home. So that's a kind of a fun thing to think about. But
is it like really inexpensive?
It's like $150 round trip.
Okay. That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. You could splurge. You wouldn't want to do it all the time, but you could splurge. But we've – a couple of our trips to New Mexico, we flew into El Paso and rented a car and drove up to Las Cruces and whereabouts. And we found the airport for a couple of older people, because we are older. We found the airport to be pretty easy to get around in, pretty self-explanatory, pretty we were able to –
El Paso?
El Paso. El Paso.
How long does it take to get there?
It's 42 miles for it's a, so it's 60 minutes to get to the airport. Our door to the airport is 60 minutes, 1 hour.
Okay.
And that's with traffic and with the city. El Paso is a very large city.
Yeah.
Geographically, it's flat. It's spread out over a lot of miles. They've built a loop around that goes through the mountains, which is really cool. If you go to certain parts of New Mexico, you go down to El Paso, you go through the pass, through the mountains, and then you go over to, say, Carlsbad. It's faster to go to Texas, El Paso, and over. And it's a beautiful drive through the mountains. It's relatively new construction. It's less than 2 years old. But we didn't have any trouble. We've been to El Paso for a couple of things that we needed to, and it wasn't scary. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't scare you.
Okay. Let's get into crime. What's the crime like in Las Cruces? Will I feel safe going out at night, walking my dog if I had to go out in the middle of the night? Is there a big homeless population? And does the government try to do something to remediate that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are good questions. One of the things that was on our list when we made our spreadsheet was crime, when mm-hmm. we were looking at areas and what was the published crime rate and what was kind of going on. The crime rate in New Mexico is very variable. New Mexico as a whole had a higher crime rate than Arkansas as a whole. Mm-hmm. But if you delve down into the statistics, the New Mexican crime is petty theft, vehicle theft.
Right.
The crime rate in Arkansas was murder, rape, and pillage. So when you look at the global statistics, you go, oh, New Mexico's got a higher crime rate than Arkansas. But when you drill down and you see the kind of crime, it doesn't make it okay. No crime's okay.
Right.
But if you're going to compare apples to apples. So the crime rate is higher in New Mexico than probably several other states. But you want to look at those statistics carefully and see, for the area you're going into, what is the actual crime that's occurring and what's the frequency? When you look at New Mexico as a whole, it's higher than several states, higher than most states, actually, because of the auto theft is a big deal in New Mexico. It's really big because you can scoot right over the border. You can scoot into California. You can scoot. So when we looked at Las Cruces, we noted that there was a higher property theft rate. So we did a lot of reading about what's the deal with that? And there is a lot of what we call grab and go, stealing bicycles, stealing. Mm-hmm. If you leave utensils out, if you leave your chainsaw out, it may get stolen in your front yard.
Crime of opportunity.
Crime of opportunity. Now, we, even in Arkansas, we knew better than to leave our chainsaw in our front yard for a week. So I would say that if you take basic situational awareness, mm-hmm. and you take basic precautions, then you're not going to feel any different. You're not going to feel any more unsafe. We walk our dog on the trail. They're just down from our house. There's a trail that goes north and south, and you can go from our house all the way to Mesilla if you want to. We've never felt unsafe walking that. There are a lot of people out walking in Las Cruces. Again, a lot of retirees in Sonoma Ranch area, which is west. That area is really built up more for walking, nighttime walking, sidewalks, well lit. We live in the older agricultural area, so there aren't as many sidewalks. I don't feel unsafe. But there just aren't sidewalks some places, so I don't walk those places that don't have sidewalks. So I would say that my feeling is I don't feel unsafe. I am aware that I need to take precautions. Mm-hmm. I need to put my stuff up. I need to lock my car at night. I need to take basic precautions, and then I feel safe. And if I think probably when you look at the numbers might, you might go, oh my gosh, crime rate. But you want to look at, it's mostly petty theft.
Is open carry legal?
Open carry is legal. The and then I want to get back to the homeless question a little bit. Mm-hmm. I forgot to address that.
Yep.
I do see people. I didn't see it like I saw it when we were in Amarillo, Texas, I'll tell you that.
Like they're not gun-toting.
They're not gun-toting. Yeah, I don't see that. Mm-hmm. There is a larger homeless, I use population in quotes, there are more unhoused persons in Las Cruces than there were in Arkansas, but that's because of the climate. Mm-hmm. You can live as an unhoused person in Las Cruces because you can find shade. And then it never gets that terribly cold in the winter.
Right.
There's a large, there's an organization called City of Hope. And their full mission is to do emergency, transitional, and permanent housing for unhoused persons. And they're very active and aggressive. And you'll see a City of Hope van driving around helping unhoused persons if they want it. The thing to remember is that you know, it's not against the law to be unhoused. It's not a crime to be unhoused. It is a crime to be on certain private property when you don't have permission. But being unhoused is not a crime. So you will see folks, unhoused people in Las Cruces, probably at a higher ratio than if you're coming from Michigan or from an area that the climate just makes it totally unlivable.
Right.
I've never been approached in 2 years by an unhoused person and asked for a donation. I've not had, you know, an event that caused me to have concern. As a social worker 40 years, I kind of look a little bit beneath the surface on the issue of folks who are unhoused and kind of look at it a little differently maybe than someone else, but that's just my bias.
Gotcha. All right. So, okay. So the crime, not too bad. You just have to dig a little deeper to see what type of crime is going on, which is a good idea in any place that you live. Will I be, you know, is the crime rate because of car theft or auto theft, or is it because of murder? So you know, you got to think about which one are you more comfortable with? Mm-hmm. So, okay, very good. Tell us a little bit. I know we touched upon healthcare, but mm-hmm. let's talk briefly about healthcare. Are there a sufficient number of doctors to patients? How long is the wait if something should happen and you need assistance and healthcare assistance? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Not unlike a lot of areas where you do have a migration of retirees coming in, there are a lot of urgent care clinics. You might wait, if it's a non-emergent issue, like you don't feel good, but it's not urgent. Mm-hmm. If it's urgent, you're going to go to an urgent care clinic. You're not going to get in to see your GP, but most GPs, You're not going to get in to see them by calling at 8 o'clock and expect to be seen that day.
Right.
Unless it's extremely serious. And they're going to tell you to go to the ER anyway, because right. there's not anything they can do about it at their office. I've not had different delays in general practice care than I had in Arkansas. I will say that in Arkansas, the difference is that, you know, the insurance plan, one of the largest insurance plans is Blue Cross Blue Shield. Mm-hmm. Blue Cross Blue Shield is a franchise. Mm-hmm. Blue Cross Blue Shield's central office is in Little Rock, Arkansas. And so when you have Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Mexico, a group of investors bought that franchise, and now they are Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Mexico. And it's that way in every state. Mm-hmm. The state regulates how that's done, but bottom line is it's a franchise. The central office of Blue Cross Blue Shield was in Arkansas. So when they were about to roll out a new project or a new program or a new service, or they were testing whether a drug should be covered or whether a service should be covered, they basically used the citizens of Arkansas as pilots. So when we were in Arkansas, I will say the difference I felt was that we had more services and they were more readily accessible. Mm-hmm. Now, what I'm wondering is that just because we were in Arkansas and because we had all these piloted Blue Cross Blue Shield programs that we accessed and the physicians had more support, there were also separate programs in Arkansas to support physicians who were enrolled as Blue Cross Blue Shield providers that don't exist in other states. So because my primary care physician in Arkansas had moved in from another state and said, hey, we didn't have this in Arizona. He was from Arizona. So we didn't have this in Arizona, and it's really great that I have this. It really helps. So I think if you're living in a state other than Arkansas, then probably you'll feel it's the same. General practitioners, it's pretty easy to pick one. There are two major regional medical centers that are 400-bed hospitals. That's considered an average. It's not a little, but it's not a big. Surgical procedures are done here. They are building a heart hospital, so cardiac procedures can be done here. Most of the docs come from, they graduate from University of New Mexico, UNM, is the major medical school here. Mm-hmm. There is an osteopathic school in Las Cruces, but it has not been up and running long enough to produce a graduating class yet. It started 2 years ago, so it's going to be another 4 years before they'll have their first graduating class. That's going to help. But I picked a primary care doc off the list and, you know, got in from just established routine care for my asthma. I got referred to a pulmonologist, and I got seen pretty quickly. I had back problems, so I got referred to a pain center pretty quickly.
Me too.
Yeah. And so I've never felt like, oh my gosh, my needs are not being met. Now, what I will say is, and it may be related to that live and let live, I don't know what the deal is, but you do have to self-advocate. In Arkansas, like for example, I go to see my GP. My GP says you need to go see, you know, a such and such specialist. I didn't have to make that appointment. That appointment would be made for me. And then a nurse case manager would call me and say, hey, we've got these dates available for, you know, your Blue Cross Blue Shield case manager called us and said, I had an ablation in Arkansas, mm-hmm. which is where they kill a nerve. And so I didn't have to do anything but show up. Mm-hmm. And in New Mexico, so far, that's not been the case. They'll say, we're going to refer you to this pain center. You need to call them.
Call them.
They will vet you as far as your insurance. Is it a big deal? No. But is it different than what we lived? Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's pretty much the same in most places because I have to do the same thing as what you're doing in New Mexico. I have to contact, you know, the
Yeah. I think we probably were spoiled. We didn't know it. We were spoiled. I knew of all the extra programs that we were getting because we were in Arkansas because they send you a list so you'll know. But I didn't know. Specialty care, again, if it's super, super serious, they're going to send you to Albuquerque or El Paso mm-hmm. because that's where they have the 800-bed hospital and that's where they have the two medical schools. And that's, you know, you're close to super duper care really, really specialty care. When, you know, when it gets down into the subspecialties,
right?
Like, you know, when you really get down into those subspecialties, then you're going to go to El Paso or Albuquerque.
Gotcha.
There is a doctor who treats LGBTQ specialties here in Las Cruces. And so that's been real convenient for us. I think you're going to probably be able to, I don't want to project on anyone else. We've not had any issue finding what we consider to be appropriate medical care at an appropriate appointment schedule.
Okay. Perfect. So do you wish that you had something in Las Cruces that you had previously, maybe in Arkansas that you don't have right now? Just anything that you miss?
That's a really interesting question. I can't think of anything. I think the being spoiled with the insurance thing, I do kind of miss that a little bit. I don't miss, I can give you a lengthy list of things I don't miss, but I'm not going to do that. You know, I don't want to offend the people listening who live in Arkansas, but I can't think of anything that I miss. And as soon as we quit speaking, I'll think of something. But
yeah, of course, but that's okay. Yeah,
that's the way my brain works.
Do you think there are any cons of living in Las Cruces?
I think I can think of one.
Okay.
If you are used to, let's just say, I'll pick a city, Kansas City, because when we lived in Northwest Arkansas, it was a quick trip up to Kansas City to enjoy the vibrant nightlife of Kansas City. If you're used to a vibrant gay nightlife, Las Cruces is not the place for you.
It's not happening.
So that would be a con for someone that's moving in and they're used to having three or four gay bars to choose from and, you know, really, really, really active nightlife. That's not Las Cruces. Las Cruces is laid back. It's kind of laid back. So that would be a con for someone who's coming from an area like Kansas City or you know, a larger area.
Right.
One of the cons might be, and this is just going to be real, I'm going to say it like it is, if you don't look like living in a community that's mostly minorities, then that's just going to be what it is. We love it, but that's just who we are. And that's not a negative if someone doesn't like that, but Las Cruces is mostly brown people. And so if you don't like that, don't come to Las Cruces.
Gotcha. Good advice. So, Michael, in wrapping up, what would you say to our audience if they're thinking of relocating to Las Cruces?
I would say visit. It is a very economical trip. Come to Las Cruces. Come to Las Cruces during the different seasons and just live it. Just come in. Just go to the festivals. Drive around. Go to the restaurants, get the vibe, get a sense of the vibe, because that's the most important thing. All the details can be worked out. That's sort of what we went through was, you know, we can work out the details. We can work out the logistics. We can figure that out. But what's the vibe? Do you feel comfortable going to different places in the city? And if you do, then it's probably a good fit. If you don't, then it's not the place. And then you'll find the place for you. But that would be my recommendation, is to come to Las Cruces for more than a couple of days.
Yeah.
Budget some time. Get the feel. Go to restaurants. Go to the Saturday morning farmers market, arts market. Just sort of, you know, get the lay of the land and see what you think. And kind of look at neighborhoods and see how many LGBTQ ally flags you see, and kind of pick where you think you might feel most comfortable. And listen, one of the things we would do is we would go, this is what we did everywhere we went, was we would go into restaurants and we would purposefully listen. What are people saying? What are they talking about? What's on the television? Is it Fox or is it NBC? That's what we would look for.
And what do you find?
NBC. NBC.
Okay.
No Fox. And so we purposefully listened. We listened to the conversations about people that people were saying. And I know that's rude to overdrop, you know, eavesdrop.
Great minds think alike, though.
Yeah, but that's what we did, because that's when people tell the truth. is when they're sitting at a table with their friends at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. That's when they're going to use a homophobic slur. Mm-hmm. That's when they're going to, because they're being honest. And because if they're talking to you and they know you're gay, they're not going to be, usually people are on their best behavior. Right. Normally. Now, there's a few people that aren't, but for the most part, people are going to have attitudes and opinions. And if they're just being out in the community socially, they're not going to, you know, tromp all over you. But when they're with their peer group, they're going to be honest. So you listen. Mm-hmm. And so we did that. We went to restaurants and we went to the farmer's market and we, you know, we just observed and listened to see what we believed the truth was of the community. And after having done that, we felt very comfortable here.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Michael, for being a part of this podcast. I learned a lot about Las Cruces, and yeah, it sounds like a great place to be. I'm so happy that you found your place.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the opportunity. And I listen to your podcasts, and I think if people are thinking about traveling, they should listen to your podcast because you will learn not just about the area, but you'll learn about how those folks, their process. Right. And I think that's helpful.
That's great. Well, thank you again. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.